Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. We're coming to you from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Another day of big news to discuss with my colleague Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Wednesdays and Sundays, the days to read you in the Dead Tree edition of the
Yeah, I'm hunting right. If you've got a column idea, give me a shout.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Jim. You can also find him on the Political Insider blog, which is part of Politically Georgia, online at MyAJC. You got to pay a couple bucks, $3.99, I think, a month, but that's cheap enough.
Yeah, I'm worth it.
Okay. Also with us, Jackie Gingrich Cushman. We're really glad you're back, Jackie. Jackie has been active in politics since she was a little girl at her father Newt Gingrich's knee. You can also read her. Your columns, remind everybody where they can see you.
You can see them on townhall.com. And this week I wrote, the last thing I wrote about was the must-watch TV tomorrow night, which of course is the State of the Union. Right, State of the Union address.
Good. We will talk about the State of the Union at some point. And former Democratic Congressman Buddy Darden is with us today as well. He represented Cobb County, largely Cobb County, back when he was a member of the United States House of Representatives. Buddy, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. And I represented six counties also north of Cobb County, all the way from the Chattahoochee River to the Chattanooga city limits.
All right. Well, thank you for correcting the record. So a couple quick notes. Well, one note. We have not yet mentioned on the air that a week from Thursday, February 8th, we're taking Political Rewind on the road. At the invitation of the League of Women Voters of Coastal Georgia, we're going to do the show in Savannah. We're going to record it on a Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. If you want to get tickets, if you're interested, I would advise you to go to the website right now because our producer, Tom Faust, tells me people have really been responding. Go to gpb.org/community, and you'll find information about how you can register. It's free, but you're going to have some sort of reservation to get in the door. You're coming down with me, thank goodness, Galloway.
I am. We can talk about the Gene Talmadge Memorial Bridge.
Yes, we can. Your column on Sunday. We'll talk a little bit about that during this show today. So I wanted to get that announcement out. We're really excited the League of Women Voters invited us to come down and talk and do the show in front of them. Let's start with the breaking news. Andrew McCabe, who is has been the FBI's number two man for the last year, basically, after the president fired FBI Director James Comey. He was going to apparently retire sometime in March. That's what he announced. But he, in fact, has decided to step down now. And apparently, Jim, and we're going to talk more about this a little bit later in the show, he's been so much caught up in all the political jockeying around whether the FBI and DOJ are, becoming political instruments of
right,
one party
right.
or the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, this is the fellow whose wife ran for Congress, mm-hmm. Received some money through Terry McAuliffe, who Trump asked how he voted.
Yeah.
And the reply was, I didn't vote.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get the sense that there's an effort being made at the FBI to reduce the profile of the agency to reduce the number of targets.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And a little bit later in the show, we'll talk about the fact that there's a pretty big campaign going on right now to get rid of Rod Rosenstein because of contentions made by Republicans that he, too, has been part of a political this notion that there's this secret cabal in justice that's out to get Trump. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Buddy, Jackie, Jim, let's start. We're going to be following the legislature throughout the session, and there are a couple of issues that keep coming up, religious liberty as an example, adoption, which we will talk about today. But there's a new issue, Jackie, that I think is worthy of real conversation and, in fact, raises some interesting questions. Senator William Ligon has introduced a bill that would impose penalties, some as severe as expulsion from a university, for students who disrupt a speech by a presumably controversial speaker invited to come to the campus to speak. Clearly, we've seen examples of this across the country. Mm-hmm. But it raises some interesting questions about whose freedom of speech do we really try to protect.
Now, Bill, I think you've got a really great point. I think a couple of things. First of all, I think it's fascinating that they're introducing a bill that tries to give the system what they should do in terms of retaliation. I think that, I mean, just from a general perspective, my guess is that's not going to go over well. Clearly, we need to have free speech. I mean, I think we probably all, at least the four of us around this table, can agree to that. It's very important. It's important for our country. But I think we also need to take into account the fact that to have free speech, you have to not only invite people, but allow them to have their say and have their say in such a way that people don't scream over them. So then you come down to your point, Bill, about where do you protest, right? If you don't appreciate someone's point of view, you have the right to protest. So then you have to think about from the university or college standpoint, where does that take effect? Does that take effect? We saw that when the Secretary of Education went to provide graduation speeches and they continually harassed her on stage while she was giving the speech. To me, that's not appropriate. If they want to stand outside and they want to protest her, I think they have the right to protest. They have the right to say they don't agree with her views. But the question is, how do you do that in such a way that it becomes civil and that you can actually hear her perspective? So it's about hearing both sides and not necessarily interrupting all the time and being, you know, argumentative.
Which reminds me of a line from my favorite protest song, which says, "When will they ever learn?" And I say, when will the legislature ever learn to stay out of things that really are none of their business? In my view, sure, it's a problem. It always has been, always will be. But we have school administrators, we have school policies, we've got a board of regents, we've got a chancellor, and there are some things, frankly, that the legislature just ought to stay out of. And I think, as a conservative, I think that government can't solve everybody's single problem, Jackie. So I think I would tell the senator and his colleagues respectfully to bug off and let this situation be handled in some other way other than by edict or fiat of the Georgia legislature.
There are two things on this bill. Is number one, if there it provides for people who have been allegedly abused, who have been deprived of their right to speech, it gives them an opportunity to receive, I think, $1,000 in court costs, which to me is a financial incentive, and you could have his name escapes me, but this fellow who was in Charlottesville, any of the alt-right people would buy it. That the other thing is that there's an assumption here that and I think it's short-sighted. There's an assumption that it's the conservative voice that's being shut out, and these things do go. I mean, you know, they do go in ways. I mm-hmm. mean, I can remember being on a campus when Jane Fonda was brought in to speak, and she certainly generated protests from the other side.
Yeah, but I do think typically what we're now hearing is protests against alt-right.
There's a militancy on that.
But here's another question, and then Jackie, I know you want to jump in, but it strikes me another issue that we have going here, and it sort of speaks to what Buddy was talking about. Here we go again, the Board of Regents and the legislature, perhaps the Senate. You know, the board so far is not weighing in on this, but they already went through it with legislators in terms of campus carry. It strikes me this may be another time in which the Board of Regents and the state Senate, at the very least, are going to butt heads over something like this. I doubt that the board is enthusiastic about this idea.
No. I thought I was clear earlier. If I wasn't clear, Buddy, clearly I don't think this is something that legislators should legislate. That was the whole point about this is on a campus where they actually have, right, the ability to set their own rules. But I do think the underlying discussion about what is free speech and what is the idea, what, can we debate ideas? So let me give you the opposite side. So last year when we were talking about, and Jim, I know you can correct me on the facts, and when we had on Emory campus, they were after the election, there were
the chalk drawings, yeah.
Thank you. And so people were worried about, they shouldn't say that because they might get, you know, they might have their feelings hurt, they might feel bad, they might feel like they're being, you know, attacked because of the words.
These were pro-Trump chalk strikes. Go ahead.
Exactly. So, I mean, again, that's, you know, you can't really guard about how people feel, right? So, and I understand you want to have a place that's inclusive, but you also, I think you have to have a place that allows different perspectives, and people need to be able to stand up for that. And I think part of what the challenge we have is we have some of those on the far left side that want to say, you know, let's have very safe zones and we all can feel good about ourselves and be happy together. And then but if people come in and we don't like them, we're going to scream at them. So I think we have to come together as a culture and say, look, it's okay to disagree and it's okay to have arguments, but we're going to be able to stand up for those
Let us remember that the last big campus controversy on free speech was only last October at KSU. And it was the right of cheerleaders to kneel during the national anthem. And if the regents have adopted a policy that says this is speech, that can't be interrupted. Well, my goodness, how do you define this other stuff of sign waving or shouting back at a speaker?
Well, there are some solutions that don't lend itself to a legislative act by the Georgia General Assembly. Having served there, I'm very proud of my service and as well as those people there today, but they cannot, some things that are beyond their purview, and I respectfully say that these situations have always been with us. They always will be. They're all individual situations. And let's let the proper parties resolve them. And somehow, people are going to get the feelings hurt. Everybody feels put upon if their particular view is not carried on or trumpeted. But at the same time, let's move on away from this and let the proper people make the decisions who don't happen to be the legislature of Georgia.
Jim, a final thought on this from you, if I could. William Ligon is the author of any number of pieces of legislation that tend to be very conservative, that get attention, but he often is not able to advance the bills that he wants. What are the chances the Senate is going to really go anywhere with this, do you think?
Probably slim, although you do have to remind yourself that there are several people in the Senate running for several things. So if it gets out of the Senate, then it's not going to go anywhere, the House. And if I'm wrong there, and if it goes to the governor, just remember that William Ligon is the one who put on the amendment to the adoption bill that forced an end to the effort to pass that thing last year.
All right. We'll watch to see if that goes anywhere. But speaking of William Ligon, he was mentioned, Jim, in an editorial that the Marietta Daily Journal published yesterday that you called to our attention. It's a tough editorial.
That was not an editorial. That was a torch.
Tell us about it.
Editorial, right?
Right.
Tell
right.
Us.
And this is you've got a what that editorial was. The Marietta Daily Journal is, buddy, you can jump in here anytime. Its editorial page is relatively conservative. And yet they were stepping up for Burt Reeves, who's a representative from Marietta, an attorney who has worked the past 3 years on rewriting Georgia's adoption law. And it was stymied last year, as we mentioned, by a religious liberty amendment that would have allowed a private adoption agency that get taxpayer money to refuse service to same-sex couples. This year, that has been removed, but you've got a kind of another quasi-religious amendment made by the Senate that would allow parents to bypass the foster care system.
Just a little bit of the language from this, as you say, scorching editorial. It does target Ligon, who was the author of this amendment that would, again, allow agencies to not deal with gay and lesbian couples. Ligon, here's what they say. If Ligon wants to engage in fawning moral posturing, no one is stopping him. But he should have the decency to file such legislation on his own rather than hijack Reeves' bill and essentially cause adoption reform to crash and burn. Decency is often very much lacking among political professionals, isn't it? And that's referring to the amendment last year. Then, in terms of what they added to language this year, they the MDJ says, in a loathsome act of sabotage, they once again vandalized Reeves' bill by adding legislation that Deal vetoed last year. And, buddy, that's some of the nicer things.
Well, as a subscriber to the Marietta Journal for the last 50 years, seriously, I have been a subscriber now for more than 50 years, and I've read practically every editorial that they have written, and this is in their grand style. Two things are wrong here. One is they think the legislation is important, and they have already dismissed Senator Ligon before on other things, but now he's picking on a hometown boy who has his first big bill he's trying to finally pass, and it got shot down last time, so they're trying to stand up, as Jim insinuated, for Representative Burt Reeves, who feels very put upon by all this, and so they figured this is a way of evening the score a little bit. Now, I'm kind of glad to see them get into a local issue for a change, and rather than do some of this way-out stuff like Ann Coulter and other people. I think this makes more sense than most of the things I've seen that in a long time.
Yeah, the governor would call himself put upon, too. I would notice that William Ligon is the only senator they call out by name. They stay away from condemning Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle. So there's some observance of Republican niceties there.
By the way, I was the last Democrat, I think, to have been endorsed by the Marietta Journal.
Well, buddy, congratulations. That's, yeah,
that was
great.
20-something years ago.
I think they're important in this article, besides the interesting language in it, is that they remind us that this is what Deal vetoed last time. Okay, yeah. So what we do know is this is a reform that's really needed in Georgia. We know that it'll make a big difference to children in Georgia. We know that Governor Deal cares about children in Georgia. We know that he's very interested in this being done the right way. So past the language and everything else, I think what's going to happen is, what Governor Deal doesn't want, Governor Deal's not going to get. So they're going to have to strip that out, and they get to pass a clean bill to move forward. And my guess is he seems to have a very good will. And I know later on we're going to talk about criminal justice reform and what he's done there. My guess is that in the end, Governor Deal will get what Governor Deal wants.
Well, so before we leave the subject entirely, Jim, it does raise the question. We've talked about this on the show already, this addition of this new language that the governor apparently doesn't like. What's the motivation here?
Well, this is a movement that's happening in a number of states, and some states have actually gone and adopted the legislation. It is a feeling among some people, and there's as I said, there's a religious element to this that the individual parent knows best about what to do for a child. And if you have a mother that's having a drug problem, needs to go to detox for 3 months, then she should be able to decide who that child is handed off to. Yeah. But Deal's people point out that this legislation allows a child to virtually disappear. There's no keeping track of where a child goes.
There's no oversight. So mm-hmm. to your point, the concern is unintended consequences, right? So you may have a parent that is going to detox if they're in a bad situation. That might also lead you to wonder, are they going to make a good decision? I mean, that's a hard thing to figure out. And without any oversight, the question is, you wouldn't know who fell through the cracks.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We need to get a break in. I do want to talk about a few other issues that relate to the state legislature, and we'll do that after the break. But we also are going to move into, Jackie suggested it, at some point, we got to talk about the State of the Union. Tamar Hallerman had a good piece in the AJC about how Georgia members of the Congress are preparing for the State of the Union. We'll talk about that and a lot more after this break. You're listening to Political Rewind.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jackie Cushman, Buddy Darden, Jim Galloway with me today. Jim, in the Sunday paper, You all had a rundown at the AJC of, you know, where we stand in terms of some of the legislation people are paying attention to. There was a bundle of bills that were mentioned in this, all of them relating in one way or another to immigration. The ACLU and other liberal organizations are objecting to them. One that requires a special driver's license for non-citizens. You would not get the same, it wouldn't look the same as the citizen license. The second would impose, and this one has been around for a couple of years, but it's back again this year, and it's something other states have enacted, imposing new fees on money transmitted out of state, and presumably that is particularly going to impact on immigrants who are here and sending money home. And the third requires it's English as the official language of Georgia. So if you look at those as a bundle, how far are they going to get this session with bills like that, especially in the Amazon session?
If this is the Amazon session of the legislature, then nowhere. Mm-hmm. Nowhere. You've got, I think, Josh McCune, who's running for Secretary of State. He's got the English-only bill. He's introduced that 5 or 6 or 7 times. The tax on wired money, I think this may be the second time that it's been offered up. And it's been repeatedly killed, again, for the same reason. It just sends a bad message about us wanting foreign investment in Georgia.
You know, buddy, it does feel as if the state Senate, which has so many candidates running for statewide office, is really coming up with bills that are great posturing but not likely to get very far this year.
Absolutely, and if you'll notice that the calendar has already been published for this legislative session, and they're going to be out of here by the end of March.
At midnight.
That's important because the day could extend as far as they wanted to extend if they didn't do that. And so I think the message is real quick. Let's get out of here. Let's do as little damage as possible. Let's make as few people mad as we can and get on home to get reelected.
Well, I think, and I think you're exactly right. But in addition to that, like you said, a lot of people were running for other positions. So anything that they can put in front of the rest of the legislature that can cause them to stake out their position from a political standpoint, they're certainly going to do. I've got to say, I was interested personally by the driver's license for non-citizens. It's because I actually have two teenagers, and they have different driver's licenses as well.
They're turned
differently, and they also have the word at the very top that says whatever that class is, because I have a 16-year-old, whatever that class is, so that you can tell that they're a minor when you look at the...
There's a stigma there. Got a trivia question for you, Bill. What we were playing this with Buddy before we went on air. What state? Which state had a constitution? Its first constitution, mandatorily published in both Spanish and English.
Well, you would wonder if it was Arizona or California, I would think.
California, 1849, and it lasted for 30 years.
Yeah, wow.
Every statute had to be printed in Spanish.
So, Jackie, that's good. One of the things I wonder about, Jackie, is, you've been aligned with the Republican Party for a long, long time. You know, all of these bills that come out from Republicans seem to be so contrary to this whole notion of Republicans believing in smaller government, less government. I mean, I know that it's almost a cliche to talk about it, but there's something to that, isn't there?
For instance, I mean,
you've got all of these immigration bills are coming from Republicans, and the bill that we talked about earlier in the show about regulating speech on college campuses.
I think so, but again, those are also, you got to lay on top of that the fact that it's an election year. So. But
that's my point.
Right.
That maybe a Republican wants to run on the fact you don't want to introduce any legislation.
And I think that wouldn't be a bad thing. But I do think if you look at it, and it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen. And I know we're going to save the union later. But I do think from the national level, you see more of that contrast between kind of big government and small government. But I do agree to your point. Once you get home and a little closer to where we are, that it becomes a little more, harder to determine sometimes.
Okay. Jackie already referred to it, Jim. Nathan Deal, probably his legacy more than anything else will be the criminal justice reform that he has been able to accomplish. And I don't think there are many people who would argue against. He has done a spectacular job. And it's paying off. The prison, the African American prison population in Georgia is down, I think, around 20+% or something.
I think close
like.
To 30%,
maybe
30. 30%.
I was just going to say, I think in some cases 30%.
It's 30%. You've got 17,000 plus inmates in the system, which is the lowest since 2002, mm-hmm. which is unusual. Your nonviolent offenders were at 40% at one point, and it's now 32%. That's very important. But here's a little nugget, and this was in an article in the AJC on Sunday, and that was that the white population of the Georgia prison system has increased by 7%.
Well, yeah, because you have fewer African Americans,
but
right?
Also because of the opioid crisis.
Okay, you know, it's interesting, Jackie and Buddy. Because we can go back not too very far. I mean, I remember the State of the State address that then-Governor Zell Miller gave, in which he decided we're going to get tough on criminals. Three strikes and you're out. That trend that we had years ago, which has now been reversed by it.
Didn't he make that two strikes and you're out at some point?
I believe it was two strikes and you're out.
Wow, okay.
And at the same time, he enforced it, and it led to an overpopulation of our prisons, which we're just beginning to get over now. And frankly speaking, it was a failed experiment. It was good politics, having been a DA, and I've been there before, and people love to hear it, but at the same time, we need to be a whole lot more selective. I commend Governor Deal on taking this issue, which was not politically popular by any means, but he did it the right way. He brought the judges, he brought law enforcement along, and consequently, I think he's been successful.
Jackie, I've said on the show that I know he must hate it should he ever be told I've said this, but Nathan Deal has ended up being a pretty progressive governor.
He is. I mean, he's done a lot of good, and I think he will be remembered for the criminal justice reform. I mean, he's put in the drug accountability courts. He's worked, to your point, Jim, to make sure that for the nonviolent offenders that there are other options so they don't have to go to jail or they can – that it's different. I think the other thing he's also done, which will have a long-term impact – both with the foster care system in terms of if they can get that through this session, but also really focusing on early education. I mean, he's been a big proponent of early education since he's been governor. His wife is named Sandra. She was a teacher, and she goes and reads to different classes. So he's been working very hard, and I do think that's something we need to commend him on. But you just never know when you get a good governor.
And I would let me speak up for the governor on the progressive that your progressive label here. I would put forth that he would argue that he's doing the conservative thing. There is a realization on the right that when you pull the heads of households, black men in particular, out of their children's lives, you have whole communities that collapse, and you can't rebuild those. You can't rebuild a whole community with absentee fathers.
Well, left unsaid, and what I should have said in the very beginning of this part of the conversation was, much of what he has done is predicated on giving people a second chance, and not letting them linger in prison for far more time than they probably ought to be there. So
recently, we had a greater percentage of our people in prison than they do in the old Soviet Union. And now Russia, but we have, I think, begun to make a lot of progress in this state, and I hope we keep going that way.
All right. Let's make quick note of something else that is, I think, really interesting. The whole country was watching the sentencing and the trial of Larry Nassar, the USA gymnastics doctor. What's interesting about who has been sentenced to, I mean, he's not going to get out of prison for the rest of his life, but what's been interesting about that, among other things, is it turns out that what finally led to his downfall was a measure sponsored here in Georgia by Representative Jason Spencer from way down there in Woodbine, the Hidden Predator Act, I think it was called, back in 2015.
Yeah, it allowed, it principally allowed, extended the statute of limitations for victims who had a hard time coming to grips or even admitting that any abuse occurred. But it also opened up records of previous investigations to victims of child abuse, and that's what happened here. It was a case of a gymnastics teacher in Savannah who had been accused of child molestation, and that kind of spilled over into the situation in was it Minnesota?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That always means and tells us that you never know what are going to be the consequences of a bill which is passed by law into the legislature, because frankly speaking, this was not the real intention of the bill, as Jim suggests. This was kind of an afterthought just to help implement it, and I think they probably had a help from a good lawyer about this discovery and getting this information, and so forth. And that is what really led to it, as Jim suggests.
Exactly. This was an attack on the non-disclosure agreements that we hear so much about that puts previous investigations into a locked box.
That's right. Have y'all been watching Stormy Daniels lately? She's under.
I don't think that's anything that any of us can confess to.
Well, she's under. I've been watching her on TV, and she's been under a one of those agreements. And she was asked all kinds of salacious questions, but she just sat there and didn't say a word because she took $130,000 not to divulge something.
If you have been living in the woods for the last few weeks, you will probably have to be told that Stormy Daniels is the woman who allegedly had a sexual relationship with Donald Trump before he was president.
The porn star,
who made a public appearance last weekend, I think
it
was.
Yeah, sorry, Buddy evidently was watching, so he'll have to fill us in.
I thought it was great.
You know, Buddy calls himself a conservative, Jackie. But we know he's still a Democrat because he found a way to work Stormy Daniels into this show.
I was actually personally very impressed with that, Buddy.
All right. And Tom Faust just told me she's going to be on Jimmy Kimmel tomorrow night. So he's obviously a Democrat,
too. Oh, State of the Union rebuttal.
All right. Let's get another break out of the way. When we come back, we'll turn to national news, including some thoughts about what we expect out of the State of the Union from President Trump tomorrow night.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Franklin Foer talks about his new article in The Atlantic. It's an investigative profile of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign manager who has been indicted in the Russia probe. The article is called American Hustler: How Paul Manafort Helped Corrupt Washington and Laid the Groundwork for the Subversion of American Politics. Join us.
Fresh Air is 3 o'clock this afternoon here on GPB.
You know, we've talked a couple times, the State of the Union has come up, so why don't we just go to it right now, Jackie Cushman? You are going to be watching this thing, I assume.
Absolutely.
Your dad's going to be watching it, I'm assuming.
He may be. He will see it, exactly.
Oh, certainly he's got satellite TV near the Vatican.
Oh, absolutely. I think he'll be flying back to D.C. the next day, and I'm sure we'll see him all over the networks later on this week. No, but I think this is going to be a very fascinating. I mean, this is much-watched TV. You've got our President Donald Trump, who is a lightning rod for controversy and for media attacks. You've got him just coming back from Davos, where I think he had a very warm reception. He was very warmly received. I think he really enjoyed being there with business people. It kind of took him out of the D.C. environment and put him somewhere where he felt very comfortable. He can talk about the tax reform, and that went very well at the end of the year. They actually had the government open, which is really a good thing, so they can all show up and listen to the State of the Union. So this is going to be really good for him. It'll be fascinating to see. I think what will be really telling is not only what he delivers that night, but how the week unfolds afterwards in terms of his rebuttal to the media and their take.
Yeah, I think what this is, I mean, he just got back from Davos, where it was a place that didn't want him, but he was there anyway, and he had a lot of fun with that. But Donald Trump on Tuesday is going to be compared with the Donald Trump of January 20th, 2017. It is going to be in 1 year ago we had a Donald Trump who was speaking of American carnage, just probably the bleakest inaugural address ever written, and it's going to be interesting to see how his first State of the Union speech compares with that.
Buddy Darden?
Well, in my view, he will probably tell you it's amazing how we've come in just 1 year from that bleak situation to our present situation. But I want to recall a couple of things. First of all, I've attended personally about 20 State of the Union addresses. I did five of the Reagan, all of Bush one, and eight of President Clinton. And I look back on it, though, to my very first one. It was in January of 1963. And as a young Senate intern, I managed to, with the permission of the police and so forth, slip into the group to see John F. Kennedy's last State of the Union address. And in those days, this was before President Reagan initiated having it in prime time. This was in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. It was around 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon, and the president came over, and you didn't have the TV cameras there. In fact, I guess they had TV
then. You were working against newspaper deadlines.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. And so it was, like I say, 2:33 in the afternoon, and I remember going up when it was over and shaking President Kennedy's hand. It wasn't that crowded around him because there were no TV cameras right on top of him and so forth, and it was a very memorable event for me. And, of course, I came back later on as a member of Congress, seeing it had turned into really a prime time event, which it is now and continues to be more and more. Back then, as I recall, the gallery was not, they weren't full, and anybody could get a seat in the gallery almost before it started being prime time. It's a big deal.
I want to come back to the atmosphere at a State of the Union because at least I probably did 10 of them in the Capitol, and Jackie, I can't imagine you didn't at some point go to a State of the Union, but let me tell you, let me ask you to respond to something that Karl Rove had to say about the State of the Union the other day. He said this of the speech: "I think Trump's got to be very careful about it appearing to be too self-congratulatory. Well, that's a losing battle. This is a moment to compliment the American people and to compliment the Congress for their cooperation with him on tax reform and regulatory relief. This is a moment where he can reset, but the reset depends upon him following through in the weeks and months ahead."
Well, I think a couple things. I think, first of all, Karl Rove thinks he's giving advice to one of the Bushes. So, I think he's confused a bit. He was very effective on what he did, but I don't think he really fits in with where we are right now, to be perfectly frank. Secondly, Trump is going to be who Trump is. I mean, he's been Trump since the day he started the media. And I'll be quite frank, I think without the media coverage, he probably wouldn't have run the primary and wouldn't have won the election. I think he was given so much media airtime during the primary that they thought he would fall over himself and drive people away. Instead, he drove it to them. He's done very well in a very different, different position than people thought he could do. I do think you begin to see him pivot. I think Davos, he came away. I had a friend that was actually in the room with him, very high executive, one of the companies, and he came across very well. They were very impressed with the ability of our president and also how he put America first but talked about being with other countries, that it wasn't America by themselves. So I think he really represented us well. I do think he will be optimistic. But go ahead, Jim.
No, I was thinking he's got – number one, I expect him to sell this infrastructure idea. I don't know how big that is, but primarily, he's going to really have to sell this immigration package.
All right, and I'm glad you set those up because I want to talk about those in a little more detail. So thank you. So start, Jim, with the infrastructure bill. What we're hearing as of yesterday morning is that despite his boasts that he was going to put $1 trillion into infrastructure, they're not going to roll out the actual plan tomorrow night. They're going to do that in the next 4 or 5 weeks. But he'll certainly give the headlines. It looks like it's going to be more like $200 billion, which means there will be an enormous burden on cities and states to come up with money to supplant their own projects. It'll mean working with private contractors. It may mean more toll roads. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's not the straight up federal investment that Democrats would like to see, and a lot of cities would like to see. The one thing in Georgia that we are going to be looking at is you've got this huge push in the legislature right now for extending broadband into rural Georgia, and so David Ralston, Casey Cagle, and the governor are all going to be looking at how many federal dollars and what kind of federal effort is going to be behind that.
But you've got such a limited time there, and the real criticism I have of most State of the Union addresses for the last 7 or 8 years in Democratic and Republican presidents, it goes on too long. And really, yeah, they ought to stick to maybe make it 30, 40 minutes at the latest. The Reagan model that we're still under now has been taken further and further, and you've got more and more guests in the gallery, and you've got more and more subjects covered. But really, I think we talk about it being for the people, Jackie. I think the people now begin to lose attention after probably about the first 30 or 40 minutes, and then it becomes really almost boredom, at least it has been, as far as I'm concerned, for about the last 7 or 8 times.
Well, the one thing I know about Trump is he'll be entertaining, so we know that. So maybe he can grab some attention. I agree with you, buddy. Shorter is better. If you can add funny, it's even better. Jim, back to your point about infrastructure. I think you're exactly right. It's not going to be the traditional, let me give you billions of dollars and good luck with how to spend with it. I do think the model he will put out, and I haven't seen it, but my guess is it will very much reflect the fact that we believe, that conservatives believe, that decision-making and that taxing and that spending should be done on the state level. So I think it'll be very consistent with kind of the conservative approach of how do you get things done and the fact that Georgians should know what Georgians need and how Georgians should fund it. But I do think he'll lay out immigration. And I think that's going to be very interesting because I think he's going to be, my guess is, much more willing to stretch out and to be proactive about Dreamers if he delivers what he campaigned on, which is the wall. He's got to have that wall. He campaigned on it. He's been clear about it.
Yeah, and he's going to have to carry the House Freedom Caucus, which is already balking at it. He's got and of course you've got Democrats on the other side who they're willing to go. It sounds like they're willing to go for the wall now, even though they don't agree with what it would do or what it symbolizes. But they really don't want to embrace David Perdue's plan to cut immigration, legal immigration, not illegal, legal immigration in half in the United States.
But as you know, the problem, and this has come out quite clearly over the last several weeks, and everybody knows this, but the problem is the president has yet to take one position and stick to it. He's been all over the board, and I think if he came down and said, this is where we are and this is what I'm going to do, I think it'd be all right. I think he's probably going to have to go ahead and do this and tell folks like David Perdue that we'll have to do this later on.
There you go. That's something I really was hoping we could get to. There has been, in the last couple of days, suddenly, a real push by some, Susan Collins certainly, but also Will Hurd, who's a Texas Republican, Pete Aguilar, who's a Democrat from California. They're all coming together, and they're saying, we have to have a simple bill here. It may be Dreamers, and it may be some funding for the wall, but we've got to get away from this whole restructuring of our legal immigration system. And that, Jackie, is if David Perdue could come home to boast about one thing he hopes to accomplish, it's rebuilding the whole legal immigration system, and that may be. He's going to have to put that aside for the time being, possibly.
I mean, you may be right. I mean, this goes back to the same kind of comparison in Georgia where you can't tack on different things to bills. You have to figure out what you can actually have happen. I do think, back to Buddy's point about he seems to change his mind. Part of that is, remember, Trump is, by background, a businessman, a developer. He negotiates all the time. He gets up and negotiates with himself on the way to the bathroom. I mean, this is what he does all the time. He negotiates. And I think in the end, what's going to happen is he's going to get as much as he can, and he's going to make sure that he moves forward.
All right. John Lewis is the one member of the Georgia delegation who is boycotting the speech. He says he's more convinced than ever that he shouldn't attend. He says it's particularly related to the comments Trump made about immigrants from Africa and Haiti. Buddy Carter is bringing an Army veteran with him to the speech. Johnny Isaacson is bringing Bruce Lavelle, who, of course, was a Republican candidate for Congress. That's an interesting
choice.
It
is. It is. See, here's why it's interesting.
Is he a big donor to Johnny's campaign?
No. Isaacson generally brings a guest, but he often uses it as an occasion for bipartisanship.
Yeah.
I mean, he brought Cesar Mitchell into one State of the Union. So my question is, does Isaacson think the Donald Trump's diversity campaign manager is a member of the opposite party?
I don't know, but I should tell you that
Jim,
we can ask Senator Isaacson that question because he's scheduled to be our guest on Political Rewind on Friday afternoon's show. So we'll ask him about that. All right. So last thoughts, but buddy, I think you made. I'm going to share a memory with you. You're so right about how the State of the Union has become a huge media event. I probably was there to cover a 10 of them. And it's always interesting for people to know how that unfolds if you're in the media. You're in the chamber. All of us are in the rotunda. We get to see all of you parade by and go into the chamber, including the vice president, the cabinet, the Supreme Court, the president himself. But then all of the media people, the electronic media people particularly, they have pens in the rotunda where there are literally ropes put around your pen. And when the speech is over, members of Congress race to the rotunda to make sure they're interviewed by the news organizations from their hometown. And people hold up big high placards saying, you know, this is Atlanta TV or whatever.
Been there, done that.
It's an extraordinary, it's quite a night on Capitol Hill, buddy.
It is. And one time after I'd left Congress, after the speech was over, I just headed to the rotunda, and I forgot that all of a sudden that I was not a member of Congress anymore and didn't need to be interviewed. So I headed back into the chamber, and that's when I saw Bill Clinton coming out, and that when our famous embrace took place.
All right. Turn to other news about President Trump as it relates to Georgia. Bernie Marcus was on Fox News. Galloway, you're nodding. You know about this appearance. He pulled no punches in his admiration for Trump and his disdain for Democrats.
Yeah,
let's listen to just a little bit of what Bernie said.
Democrats, use your stupid brains. You don't have any brains,
happens. Now, Bernie, be nice.
Listen,
be a nice billionaire.
You're calmer than I am. I've been watching this scene take place for a while,
right.
and I just don't get it. I just don't get there thinking.
All right, that was a reaction. That was Bernie Marcus, of course, is the co-founder of Home Depot. And he is a grand supporter of conservative causes, including several Gingrich campaigns, I think.
Absolutely.
And what he was railing against Democrats who called the $1,000
bonus
that Home Depot was giving to some of its workers as chump change.
Yeah. By the way, he was talking to Neil Cavuto. I should point that out.
Well, and I think in this particular instance, he's actually right, because $1,000 bonus is a lot of money. I mean, and to call it chump change, I think is very disrespectful to American workers.
He is somewhat right.
How is that wrong? So explain to me.
Well, I love Bernie Marcus, because, but let me say this about him.
Hang on, buddy. let me address Ms. Cushman here, because a bonus is not a pay raise. A bonus is a one-time deal that doesn't commit a company to any further support of a worker.
And it's also tax deductible.
So you can call it chump change because it's a one-time thing. I don't understand your logic. I don't understand. I hear what you're saying. It doesn't make sense to me.
$1,000. I would be happy with $1,000.
Exactly. But it doesn't, I would be happy with $1,000.
But it doesn't buy what it used to.
Well, Bernie Marcus. Let me say this about Bernie Marcus. He's a great American, and he articulates himself quite well. Of course, Arthur Blank is his counterpoint as far as Home Depot is concerned. But you've got to remember, our friend Bernie, as able as he is and as rich as he is, started off as a stand-up comedian.
I didn't know that.
Is that true?
That is true.
I didn't know that either.
Master of trivia.
Well, let it be said that Marcus has been in Trump's corner from the very beginning. He is an extremely conservative businessman, whereas his co-founder, Arthur Blank, I don't think Arthur Blank would want to call himself a liberal, but he's certainly over there in that corner. It's an interesting political dynamic, isn't it, Jackie?
Oh, absolutely. They have very different perspectives. But, you know, remember, Bernie Marcus, I do think he created Home Depot. He understands from his perspective what makes jobs work in America, and that's what he's focused on. So when you say that's what he's focused on in terms of politics. He's really focused on job creation.
All right. You know, Jim, I don't know, the cable, if you watch CNN, if you watch Fox, if you watch MSNBC, you're going to get different perspectives, but, you know, they have all talked into the ground this question of the memo. The memo, which apparently the Republican Intelligence Committee is going to meet at 5 o'clock today to decide to vote on whether to release to the public. And one of the things they believe that memo shows is that, in fact, there was a political cabal at FBI and at CIA and at Justice to undermine Donald Trump's candidacy for president. It may be one of the reasons that McCabe is getting out. He's just tired of the political pressure. We don't have time to go into it in detail. We'll watch it unfold. But to me, Jim, it's just another sign that the politicization of all of our institutions is taking us all right down with them.
And you've got, in the situation, you've got Donald Trump siding with House Republicans who want to release it.
Yes.
You've got the DOJ saying, no, please don't. It hasn't been vetted. You could be spilling some fairly dangerous
and
secrets.
And you have Democrats saying this is a memo which the chair...
created by the Republicans.
And which Devin Nunes, the chairman of the committee, has put together, but he hasn't read the underlying documentation, which apparently goes into this memo. So, Alner, buddy, what's your 30-second take on this?
Sadly, it's a bad situation when either political party tries to undermine and take away the credibility of our respected institutions. And I've always respected the FBI. I realize that primarily it was more Republican, far more Republican than Democrat, including the last two directors, but it's been a very trusted American institution, and I deeply regret any efforts to try to undermine it from the Democrats or the Republicans.
You get just a few seconds, too.
Yeah, I just want to say real quickly, I think there is some concern. I don't know anything about what's in the memo, obviously, but I do think when you have an institution that has people looking into investigations where they're clearly or have a political bent, and they talk about it via text between each other or during an alleged affair, I think there's some issues that we need to discuss. And I think we do need to make sure our institutions are that proceed in an unbiased manner. And if they've determined what the outcome is before the investigation, that's of concern.
All right. We're just about out of time. I do have one more item that I don't know if all of you in the studio have seen, but it'll certainly come as a relief to you as well as to our listeners. I know a lot of people were worried about what Omarosa was going to do when she left the White House. You know, you leave the White House, you go off and take a prestigious job with a law firm. Maybe you go work on K Street. You do something of weight, of substance, of merit. And Omarosa is going to go back to her roots. She's going to do another reality show. She is.
Not the Home Shopping Network, huh?
Congratulations.
No, she's going to, what is that show called? That where they all, Big Brother.
Got to land on your feet.
She's doing Celebrity Big Brother. God bless her.
That's we wish it. Her well.
That's it for us on Political Rewind today. Jackie Cushman, Buddy Darden, Jim Galloway. Thanks for being with us. Jim, see you again on Friday's show for our conversation with Johnny Isaacson. And see you, the rest of you, on Wednesday for another Political Rewind at 2 o'clock. Bye-bye.